skin is paper, stupid girl. You even stand like a servant. A demon wouldn't hold themselves in such a way. Besides, the official inspection tomorrow will reveal if you are not who you say you are. You won't be able to hide anything from them, no matter how many enchantments you might have used. Turn, she commands abruptly. I do as she says, feeling her stare roam over me. Mistress Iara tells me you have no experience whatsoever with the court. No connections that you are aware of. I shake my head as I turn back round. In a flash, she jerks forward, clasping my chin in her talons. You do not answer with crude movements, girl. Sour breath hits my face. If I ask you a question, you respond with, Yes, Madame Himura, or No, Madame Himura. Is that clear? I swallow. Yes, Madame Himura. Do you even possess any skills, aside from being insolent to your superiors? Glowering, I mutter. I'm good with herbs and cleaning. Herbs? She lets out a racking laugh. Cleaning? We are women of the court. Those are jobs for servants and maids. As a paper girl, it's your new skills. Your female skills you're to cultivate. Are you telling me you have no such talents? She clacks her beak. How worthless. I grind my teeth to hold back a retort. Those are the skills my parents and Tien taught me. Skills that are surely more worthwhile than knowing how to entertain a king. Madame Himura cocks her head, appraising me coolly. She makes a strange, almost purring sound at the back of her throat. Ah, I see. You think you're better than this. Well, just wait until your lessons start. You'll see how hard such skills are to master. Her eyes narrow. Despite what you think, I see the hunger in you. The desire to prove yourself. Your chi fire is strong. Perhaps too strong. We'll have to keep watch, or it might end up burning all you touch. With barely a pause, she snaps. Are you pure? Pure? Sex, you're a new core. Have you allowed a man to enter you? My face flushes. Considering what I'm here for, her frank language shouldn't be a surprise. But Tien has only ever broached the subject with me in a half-joking manner, and my father certainly never mentioned it. I'd been working in the shop full-time since Mama was taken, so I wasn't able to keep up with girls my own age. If things had been different, maybe I'd have already spent a few years giggling with friends about love and lust. Instead, those thoughts were secret ones. Feverish dreams in the middle of velvety nights. I drop my eyes from the eagle woman's fierce gaze. No, I reply truthfully. I sense her watching me, perhaps searching for a lie. A glimmer of hope rises in my belly, because maybe if she doesn't believe me, she'll order General Yu to take me back. But I shove the idea away, remembering his threat. Finally, Madame Himura turns to Mistress Iara. Fetch Lil, she orders. Have her bring soap and clean clothes. A plain hanfu set will suffice. We wait in silence. I want to ask what's going on, but from the eagle woman's stance, I can tell she expects me to stay quiet. Mistress Iara returns a minute later with the same doe-form maid who opened the door to the general and me. The girl gives me a grin, which disappears as soon as Madame Himura rounds on her. Clean and dress, Lei, she commands with a jab of her cane. Then bring her to join the rest of the girls. Without a backward glance, she moves toward the door, taloned feet clicking. Wait, I shout. It's out before I can help it. Madame Himura swirls round, and I recoil at the cutting glare she gives me. I mean, Madame Himura, does this mean I'm one of the paper girls now? The eagle woman scowls. You'd better not be so dense in your classes, she snaps before leaving the room. But Mistress Iara offers me a smile. Yes, Leiji, it does. She slides the door shut behind her, but I keep staring at the place she had stood. The air is solid in my lungs, my throat filled with rocks. I run my tongue over my dry lips. The young maid beams at me like this is the best news anyone could receive. Congratulations, mistress, she sings. You must be so happy. Her words pull a rough laugh from my throat. Me, a mistress. And to be congratulated for this? Whatever this will turn out to be. And then I'm rounding my back on her, hiding my face with my hands to stifle the manic laughter that's pouring out of me, even as tears arrive to accompany them, hot and wet, leaking out of me just as uncontrollably. Everything that's happened over the past few days seems to drain from my body as it finally hits me. I'm here, in the royal palace. And I will be staying here if I want to keep Baba and Tien safe. If I want to keep them alive. 6. A wooden tub is brought to the room and filled with warm, fragranced water. While she bathes me, Lil quizzes me about my life before the palace. Questions tumbling from her mouth so quickly, I barely finish answering one when the next comes. Which province am I from? Do I have siblings? What's it like to be paper cast? Is my mother as beautiful as I am? I'm not used to being naked in front of someone else, but Lil acts like it's nothing, as direct with her work as with her questions. She dunks a sponge into the water and scrubs it over me before dragging a comb through my knotted hair. Eventually, her chatter starts to put me at ease. She reminds me of Tien, albeit a younger and far less bossy version. And after my long journey to the palace, it's impossible to deny the pleasure of warm water on my skin. The bathwater is soon muddy, while my skin has done the opposite. The grime and sweat gray sheen that has accumulated over the past few days shed with each stroke of the sponge until I am revealed anew, baby pale and as polished as a coin. Afterward, Lil dresses me in simple taupe-colored robes, similar to Madame Himura's Hanfu, though the design and material is far plainer and the sash is slimmer. You'll only wear this type of Hanfu on days you don't have to leave the house, she explains. The design of Mistress Yara's robes are beautiful, I say as her deft fingers adjust the cerulean sash at my waist. Am I right that their style is originally from Shomu? Lil nods. It's the traditional dress of the White Wing clan themselves. So why is it worn here in Han? Well, I don't know if this is true exactly, but legend has it that the original Bulking fell in love with one of the clan lord's daughters. He admired the clothing style she wore so much that he had it adopted here in Han. And Rain, and Ong Ken, too. Of course. Forced assimilation. Just another of the wonderful things to come from the Night War 200 years ago. Lil's doe ears quiver as she steps back to assess her work. "You'll see, mistress. Food, architecture, art, music. All the most beautiful things in Ikara can be found in the palace. Like you." I grimace at this, but she doesn't seem to notice. "Speaking of that," I say, "what are they like, the other girls?" "Oh, beautiful too, of course," she grins. "But they're going to be so jealous when they see you. No paper girl has ever been blessed with eyes like yours." She picks up my dirty clothes, adding, "Wait here, mistress. I'll just throw these away." I nod, distracted. Blessed? The word rings even more hollow tonight. My eyes are the reason I've been ripped from my home. Just like the original Bull King, spying something so beautiful that he claimed it for his own. They're not a blessing. They're a curse. And then I remember. "Wait," I say, lurching after her. Lil blinks as I reach into my trouser pocket, drawing out the familiar, egg-like object inside. She smiles up at me. "Your birth blessing pendant." Its gold casing gleams in the lantern light. Ever since I was young, I've kept it with me, worn it as a necklace, something comforting about its weight against my chest bone. "When does it open?" Lil asks, eager, as I loop it around my neck and tuck it under my robes. "In 6 months," I mutter. Her eyes light up. "Maybe your fate is love, mistress. With the king. What an honor that would be." And her look is so hopeful, I have to turn away. When Tien told me how many families see great honor in their daughters being chosen, I couldn't understand it. Honor is in family, in hard work and care and love, in a small life, well lived. Yes, sometimes I've wished for more. Grumbled at Tien's bossing about, at the long, tiring days of shop life. Dreamed of starlit nights of adventures, and a world outside the village, and a love so bold it sets my heart alight. But always my future was framed in the safe arms of Cienzo, of my family, of my home. A few minutes later, Lil leads me through the muted house, sounds of daily life muffled behind the painted doors. Dark wood corridors shine with polish. The paneled walls are draped with batik silks and delicate paintings. Every inch of the house drips with elegance. Even the air seems rich somehow, clean and perfumed. We reach a set of sliding screen doors. Raised voices sound from within. "Nine girls?" a thin, reedy voice declares. "Nine? It makes no sense. It's eight. It's always been eight. That's the tradition." "Continue this way, Blue, and I shall gladly throw you out to return the group to its original number." "I'd like to see you try, Madam Himura. You know the power my father holds in the court. I don't think he'll take kindly to you casting me out." "Who's that?" I whisper to Lil. "Mistress Blue," she replies. "Her father, Lord Ito, is very famous. He's one of the only paper caste members of the court." As the voices die down, she asks, "Are you ready to go in, mistress?" I take a slow inhale, then nod. Lil gives me an encouraging smile. Then sliding the door open, she announces with a bow to the room beyond, "Presenting Mistress Lei Ji." The scents hit me first. Incense from joss sticks and burners, the delicate fragrance of chrysanthemum tea. Maids in pastel-colored robes drift round, pouring the tea from porcelain pots with graceful curves of their wrists. and even they would be intimidating if they had walked into my parents' shop. But compared with who they're serving, their presence fades. The paper girls. Kneeling round a low table in the center of the room, they cut striking figures draped in vivid, lustrous fabrics, like a collection of living jewels. I take them in, one by one. There is a girl with the bronzed, almost russet brown skin, common in the southern provinces, draped in vibrant orange robes that remind me of the sarongs we have in the north. Her raven hair, twisted into a plait threaded with beads. At her sides are a stern-looking girl with a sharp, bobbed haircut at odds with her curvaceous figure, and a petite girl in an ice-blue dress. Opposite them sits a sweet-faced girl with rust-colored hair, dense clusters of freckles adorning her nose and cheeks. She gives me a nervous smile as our eyes meet. A pair of twins kneel next to her, pale-faced and straight-backed, like identical dolls, their lips drawn in a berry color to match their modern, high-collared dresses, so figure-hugging it pulls a blush to my cheeks. Then I notice a girl set apart from the group. Unlike the rest, she's sitting almost casually, long legs folded to the side. Her draped skirt and blouse are tailored from a velvety, ink-black fabric, shimmering with intricate embroidery, like a star-dusted night. Wavy hair cascades to her waist. Even the maids have been openly staring since I came in. But this girl is still facing away, gazing over her shoulder with a bored expression. A slight pout puckers her darkly glossed lips. Just when I'm about to turn away, she looks round. Our eyes catch. At least that's what it feels like. A physical hold. She returns my gaze with a look so intense, it roots me to the spot before her curved, cat-like eyes flick away.
This is her? This is the irresistible nine?
A high voice cuts through the quiet. It's the girl we heard outside. Blue. She's tall, even standing next to Madame Himura, with narrow shoulders and glossy, azure-black hair, straight and smooth. Her features match the sharpness in her voice, angled cheekbones like two blades, and narrow eyes shadowed with paint, glinting out from beneath blunt bangs. The front of her emerald dress dips daringly low, revealing a flat triangle of alabaster skin.
"Well," she says, wielding her voice like a scythe, "if she hadn't been announced, I'd have mistaken her for the maid."
Her high laugh rings out, cutting off abruptly as Madame Himura slaps her. The room falls silent. Blue's head is twisted to the side. She holds it stiffly, her shoulders jerking with shallow breaths, dark hair hiding her face. Despite her hunch, Madame Himura seems to double in size as she glares down her beak at Blue, her feathers ruffled.
"I know who your father is, girl. After you were chosen, he came to me to ask that I don't treat you any differently because of his status. So you better give me the respect I'm owed."
As Blue's cheeks flush, the eagle woman's gaze sweeps over the room.
"That goes for all of you, no matter your background, whether you have grown up with all or nothing. Here, you are all on the same level, and that level is beneath me."
She jabs her cane in my direction.
"Now, welcome, Lei Ji, in the proper manner."
The girls drop into bows, Blue a fraction slower than the rest.
"I have already explained why she's here," Madame Himura continues. "I don't expect to repeat myself. Mistress Ciara will show you to your sleeping quarters and instruct the maids to attend you. Tomorrow, you have your assessments. Be ready for when I come for you."
"Yes, Madam Himura," the girls recite. I hurry to echo them. When I look round, I catch Blue watching me, her eyes shining darkly. Mistress Iara takes us to our private quarters on the northeast side of the house. She explains that the building we're in, Paper House, is where we will live during our year as the king's concubines. Her and Madam Himura's rooms are also to be found here, along with the maid's dormitory and a variety of parlors, kitchens, and entertaining rooms. Paper House is in the center of Women's Court, flanked to the north and east by gardens, and to the south and west by other buildings, suites for the women of the court, as well as bathhouses, tea rooms, and shops. Our bedrooms run off a long corridor. Though immaculately kept, the rooms aren't what I was expecting. They're bare, furnished simply with a sleeping mat and a shrine stocked with joss sticks and a charcoal fire to burn them. Not exactly rooms to host a king. Then I shudder. Because where instead will that take place?
"This isn't very private," Blue sniffs, trailing a manicured nail along the edge of a door, which is barely more than a few thin pressed sheets of rice paper. Light from the hallway shines right through them.
"It isn't meant to be," replies Mistress Iara. "Your lives belong to the court now, girls. The sooner you understand that, the better." Her voice is kind, but Blue scowls at her. As Mistress Iara answers a question from one of the other girls, the pretty freckled girl I noticed earlier slips in beside me, offering a hesitant smile. She looks young. Too young really to be here, with a round face framed with short auburn hair and luminous opal-green irises. Their shade is the exact color of the fields outside our village, rich and vibrant after the monsoon rains. And I return her smile, fighting the stab of homesickness that shoots through me.
"It's to stop us from taking lovers, isn't it?"
the girl whispers, gesturing to the doors. I shrug.
"I guess so. Not that I'd know." Her freckled cheeks grow pink. "I haven't ever had one. A lover, I mean. Not a bedroom. Though even that I shared with my sisters." "Have you? Have you had one?" she adds, breathless. I lift my brows. "A bedroom?"
"No," she giggles. "A lover."
I shake my head and her face relaxes.
"I'm glad I'm not the only one. Mistress Iara told me I'm the youngest here. I just turned 16 last week. I thought I'd be the only one without any, experience."
She leans in, earnest.
"I mean, I know we're not supposed to do anything before we're married anyway, but some of my sisters have done things, and not just kissing."
She lets out another nervous laugh, hiding her mouth behind her hands.
"Sorry, I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Aoki."
"I'm Lei.
I know, the ninth girl."
Her eyes shift to the crown of azure black hair at the front of the group, as she adds under her breath,
"Though maybe not for long. I don't know how much longer she'll last if she continues talking to Madam Himura that way."
Aoki flashes a quick grin.
"Can't say I'd be sad to see her go."
I laugh, stopping quickly when the other girls look around. Mistress Iara shows us to our rooms, instructing us to wait for our maids. My room is at the end of the corridor, opposite Aoki's. I step inside slowly, while she practically dances into hers.
"I don't think I'm going to be able to sleep,"
she calls from across the hall.
Isn't this so exciting?
I make a noncommittal murmur. She takes a few steps forward, fingers twined together at her waist.
Do you maybe want to wait with me? We can leave the doors open so your maid knows where you are and...
I'm going to rest for a bit, I cut in. Sorry, I'm just so tired. Disappointment flickers over her face.
Oh, all right.
The instant I shut my door, my smile drops. I stand awkwardly in the center of the room, loosening a long exhale. It looks just the way I feel. Bare, stripped apart. For the first time since waiting for Madame Himura's inspection, I am alone. And as I'm finally able to let go of the pretense, the forced smile and chatter, everything else drains from me too. I loop the room, running my fingers along the wall. Back in our shop house, I know all the knots in every wood panel. Each kink and nick and stain had a history, a memory attached to it. You could read my childhood in the fabric of the building. But here, it's all blank. Or, not quite. I lift my fingertips back to the wall. Even recently, this room must have belonged to a previous paper girl, and others before. The paper girl tradition has been going on for hundreds of years. The walls might be clear of my own memories, but they are dense with layers upon layers of other girls' memories. A whole story, a whole saga of lives that came before. I rest my forehead to the wood. There's something comforting in knowing other girls were here before me and survived. What was she like, the previous girl to live here? What did she feel on her first night in this room? What dreams did she dream here? My stomach gives a kick. What dreams of hers were lost? At the sound of the door opening, I spring back from the wall. Lil rushes in. She's grinning and breathless, her uniform rumpled.
Mistress Yar is making me your maid, she exclaims. We were one short, and I've been wanting to progress from a housemaid for the last year. I've just given my 80 thanks to the Heavenly Masters, but I still can't believe it.
Her smile is infectious. Then I'd better bow to you, I say, my lips twitching. I kneel, a bit awkwardly in my robes, flattening my palms on the floor. How may I be of service, Mistress Lil? She erupts into giggles.
Oh, please don't. Madame Himura would have a heart attack if she sees.
I look up with a smirk. All the more reason to do it. As Lil gets me ready for bed, the fear and unease start to shift. The pressure on my ribs unknotting just a little. I didn't imagine making friends here, but Lil and Aoki and Mistress Iara have given me hope that things might be different. On the way to the palace, I was prepared for sadness, for tears, for having to do things I don't want to, and many more I am terrified of, for pain, for homesickness. As the hours went by in the carriage, and then during that seemingly endless boat journey, I prepared myself for all the things that I could possibly find within the palace walls. The one thing I didn't prepare for was kindness. And yet somehow, kindness, these light exchanges with Aoki and Lil, it still feels wrong, like the worst kind of betrayal. My father and Tian must be heartbroken that I'm gone. And here I am, able to smile, to laugh even. That night, lying under the unfamiliar coolness of silk sheets, I cup my birth blessing pendant to my chest. It's the only thing I have with me from home. Squeezing my eyes shut against the sting of the tears, I picture Baba and Tian in the house,
how they might be coping, and it breaks something deep within me. The word itself, home, is a blade in my gut. It's a call, a song, one I can't answer anymore. On nights when I couldn't sleep, back in Cienzo, I used to lie exactly the same way I'm lying now, hands over my heart, my pendant safely nestled in the curve of my palms. I would pass the time by imagining what word could be hidden inside, and there was something comforting in it. The idea of being looked after, almost. A promise of a future, so beautiful I couldn't even dream it yet. But on the occasional night, my mind would fill the darkness with words just as black. Because whatever I want to believe, it is possible that my pendant holds a future I will not be grateful to receive. And tonight, that's never felt more likely. 7. When the gong sounds the next morning, I've already been up for hours. It was the nightmare again, the kind you can't banish with assurances that it's all make-believe. That you can't wake from and let the bright sureness of your life slowly melt the darkness away. This was the kind of nightmare whose monsters you can never outrun, that are still there when you open your eyes. The worst kind of nightmare, because its monsters are real. It hit me hard and fast, almost as soon as I'd closed my eyes, thrusting me straight into the fire and screaming. The roar of demon soldiers, fragments of memory, barely smudged by age. The way Mama cried my name. Splashes of blood on the floor, as vivid as paint. The bodies I tripped over, trying to get back to my parents. Afterward, only returning home with one. I knew I wouldn't get back to sleep after the nightmare, so I spent the rest of the night pacing the small rectangular patch of my room, feet almost silent on the soft bamboo mat floor, until my pulse returned to normal and my breathing slowed. And as I paced, a new idea started to emerge. That maybe it's a sign that on my first night in the palace, I dreamed of Mama. Here I am so far from home, in a place where she could have also been. Instead of sleeping, I take one slow lap of my room after another. Did the soles of her feet kiss the ground here, too, once? There's got to be some way I can find out more about her while I'm in the palace. Someone who might know what happened to her. If nothing else good can come from being here, at least I might be able to get some closure about that. How incredible would it be to be taken from one half of my family, only to find the other half here on the opposite side of the kingdom? As the morning starts to fill with the sounds of daily life, I move to the window. Outside, the sun is rising, burning away the last scatters of raindrops from the night storm. My room looks out over the northeast side of Women's Court. I'd been imagining small gardens from what Mistress Iara told us last night, but the daylight reveals them to be vast, an undulating landscape filled with trees and ponds and lush wildflower meadows. Winged roofs of pagodas poke through the treetops. The grounds stretch so far into the distance that the palace walls are barely visible. But my gaze is still drawn to them, a severe line of black, like an angry brushstroke across the horizon. A flock of birds scatter into the air. I follow their wheeling formation over the trees before they fly beyond the wall. I turn from the window, a sour taste in my mouth. It doesn't matter how beautiful the cage is, it's still a prison. There's a tap on the doorframe. Lil bounds in a second later, far more excitable than is decent for this time of day. "Good morning, mistress. Did you sleep well?" "Pretty well," I lie. She beams. Great, because you've got a busy day ahead. We need to start getting ready. She clasps my hand and pulls me out of the room, leading me down the corridor. First stop, the bathing courtyard. I usually bathe at the end of the day. You know, after I've had some time to get dirty. She sighs and says, as if it were obvious, paper girls wash in the mornings. It's one of the rules. Mr. Ciara says it's symbolic. Something about purifying yourself for the day ahead, getting rid of negative chi from bad dreams. Thinking of last night, I repress a grim laugh. I'd need a whole lake for that. We turn the corner to the bathing courtyard, a rush of hot air instantly moistening my skin. I raise my hand against the sun as we step down into a sunken courtyard dotted with big wooden barrels. Fronds of swaying bamboo line the walls. I pick up the scents of sweet rose water and ylang ylang, the ocean tang of seaweed, and homesickness darts through me as the fragrances take me back to my herb shop. Through the steam, I notice that some of the tubs are already occupied. Most of the girls are submerged up to the neck, but when they move, they reveal flashes of skin that draw my eyes, the naked curve of a breast, the slope of a thigh. I drop my eyes quickly to the floor and keep them trained on my feet as we cross the courtyard. Nakedness must be something everyone from affluent families is used to. Most of these girls probably had maids since they were young. Maybe they had places like this in their own houses, instead of a tiny room downstairs at the back of a shop house where you had to use a sponge and water heated from a kettle to clean yourself, crouched in a corner so water wouldn't spill under the door. Thankfully, Lil brings me to a barrel tucked into a corner that's well hidden by the clouds of steam. I shrug off my nightrobe before she can help, then practically dive into the tub.
Don't worry, mistress.
She giggles when I emerge, peeking my head up above the water.
You'll get used to it.
Once we're back in my room, she dries my hair with a towel before dressing me in simple midnight blue robes. Lil is just crouching at my feet, helping me into the sock-like indoor slippers the women here wear to keep their soles smooth, when the clicks of talons sound in the hallway.
Hurry up! Madam Himura calls. The others are waiting.
With one last encouraging look from Lil, I lift my chin and step out into the hall, and immediately trip. I flail sideways, throwing a hand to the wall to catch myself. A few of the girls titter.
It's the shoes,
I mumble, righting myself. I'm not used to them.
Of course you aren't,
Madam Himura says. With a sigh, she turns, motioning for us to follow her. Even the snap of her cane manages to sound disapproving. Aoki comes over as soon as she's gone, lacing an arm through mine.
I'm struggling with them too, she whispers. It's weird to have your feet all squashed like this. My sisters would laugh so much if they could see.
Most of the other girls have left, but Blue hangs back.
Perhaps it's good you're here after all, Nine, she says silkily. You make even little Aoki here look graceful.
I make a rude gesture with my hands when her back is turned, and Aoki suppresses a laugh. After some more stumbling, Aoki and I catch up with the girls. We were taken to the same parlor we were in last night. A set of sliding doors has been opened, letting in sunlight and the sound of leaves rustling in the garden beyond. Madam Himura leaves us without explanation. We wait until the rap of her talons has faded away before erupting into anxious whispers.
I wish I knew what the assessments are,
Aoki says, chewing her bottom lip. Around us, the other girls are speculating on the same topic. Nothing too physical, I hope. I have some scars.
Her emerald eyes shimmer.
Lei, do you think they'll send me home because of them? I can't be thrown out before I've even met the king.
I take her hand and give it a squeeze.
I'm sure you'll be fine, Aoki. They chose you. They want you here. But what if they've changed their minds? Maybe now that they've seen me with the other girls, they've realized they made a mistake picking me. Maybe...
Tell me about the selection process, I interrupt, realizing she's on the verge of a meltdown. How does it work?
She blinks. Haven't you followed any of the selections?
I shrug. My village doesn't pay much attention to the court. It's just so far away. I don't add the other reason, that we don't want anything to do with it, that what the king gets up to isn't important to us, as long as he leaves us alone.
I thought everyone in Ikara follows them, Aoki exclaims, and seeming to forget her nerves, she launches into a thorough explanation.
I learned that the selection for paper girls begins on the first day of the third month each year. The process is split into two halves. The first, which runs for 6 weeks, invites families to bring their eligible daughters, paper caste of course, and at least 16 years old by the time they would be introduced in the palace, to the court representatives in their province. The representatives evaluate candidates based on their ancestry, social standing, and new skills, as well as their appearance. Scouts also travel throughout Ikara to find suitable girls whose families didn't put them forward. The number discovered this way is surprisingly high. Or perhaps not so surprising. Most paper castes aren't exactly the king's biggest fans. Once the 6 weeks are up, the representatives put forward their recommendations, shortlisting 100 girls. The king is shown the selection to allow him to rule out any he deems unsuitable, and occasionally, to highlight ones he particularly likes the look of. A final 30 girls are invited to Han's capital for a presence with delegates from the royal court. Aoki tells me her family are rice paddy farmers in a remote part of eastern Shomu. The banquet was her first time out of the fields.
I wasn't myself at all, which is probably why they liked me. My quietness must have come across as dignified, but really I was just keeping my mouth shut so I didn't throw up. None of us could believe it when a royal messenger delivered my letter of acceptance, sealed by the king himself. I still can't believe it, she adds, her thick lashes tilted down. I keep waiting for someone to tell me it's all been a joke.
Don't say that. You earned your place here just like the others, she grins.
You did too, Lei.
You're extra special for them to make such a big exception for you. I bristle at the idea that I should be honored to be here, but the look she gives me is so earnest I swallow my retort. Just then, the door opens, a maid announcing Madame Himura's return. In an instant, the room falls quiet. The eagle woman waves a hand irritably.
Blue, she croaks from the doorway. You're first.
Blue rises to her feet with a look that says, Of course I am. I didn't think Madame Himura would take long to come back, but 2 hours pass before the next girl is called, and another two until the next. Maids come in to service lunch, which I practically wolf down without chewing. It's been a long time since my last proper meal, and the palace food is delicious. Some of the dishes are recognizable to me, if far more delicate than how I've tasted them before. Steaming bowls of coconut rice, jeweled with pomegranate seeds, marinated eel slices, a whole roasted duck, glistening with dark sauce. But far more are unfamiliar, and even though my stomach rounds, I make sure I try at least one mouthful of everything. By the evening, the superior-looking girl with the cat-like eyes and I are the only ones left.
Best till last, right?
I say when we've been sitting in silence for over an hour. Cat girl doesn't reply, watching me with her haughty look before turning pointedly away. Uncomfortable silence it is, then. Glaring down at my plate, I stab at a sugared, glutinous rice ball a bit too aggressively. The little cake skids off the plate and plops onto the floor. A snort of laughter. I look up to find Cat Girl watching, eyebrows arched, her lips tucked up. Then, seeming to remember herself, her expression returns smoothly to neutral. The chopsticks here must be different from the ones in Cienzo, she says coolly. It's the first time I've heard her speak. Her voice is lower than I expected, and husky. It carries the elegant intonation of an aristocratic family, lilting vowels, slow pacing. Yes, I mutter under my breath. The ones here seem to be used as sticks up everyone's. Her eyes glide back to me. What was that? Nothing, I sing, and luckily Madame Himura chooses that moment to return, calling finally for me. I leave without saying goodbye to Cat Girl. Madame Himura leads me to a small room, a high, bare table in its center. A tall figure stands beside it, with his back to us, and I catch an animal scent, something musty and sharp. Nerves ripple through me. Dr. Uo, Madame Himura says, pushing me forward. The next girl is here. I force myself to stand steadily as the doctor turns, fixing me with a beady-eyed stare. He's a boar demon, mooncast. Two short tusks grow from either side of a snout-like nose. His skin is coated in tawny-colored hair, wizened with age, and a pair of jade spectacles perch at the end of his nose. Leiji is the one I told you about, doctor, Madame Himura continues. This year's additional girl. Since she didn't go through the official selection process, please be sure to inspect her even more thoroughly. The doctor's nostrils twitch. Of course, madam. His voice is as scratchy sounding as his hair looks. As Madame Himura moves aside, he steps closer, hunching to bring his face in line with mine. Then, before I can process what he's doing, he reaches out and tugs my sash free. My robes loosen. The doctor pulls to open them, and I grapple against him to keep them shut, the blood rushing in my ears. What's going on? I gasp, looking past the doctor to where Madame Himura is settling herself in the corner of the room, a scroll unfurled on the floor in front of her. Stop struggling, girl, she commands, not even looking up from her reading. A maid crouches in front of her, lifting a teapot. Let the doctor inspect you. But... Navya, go help. Jumping up, the maid rushes over. Please, mistress, she pleads, clasping my arms. The doctor won't hurt you. But I continue to struggle as the robes are ripped from my body, first the outer layer, then the inner. The maid is steel cast, like Lil, most of the servants here are. And even though her jackal eyes are kind, and she doesn't seem to enjoy herself as she helps the doctor undress me, my face burns with humiliation at my disrobing by two demons. It's as though I'm somehow doubly unclothed in their presence, lacking in robes and demon adornments. And I feel very clearly in this moment what it means to be a paper caste, to have a body sheathed in something so delicate and easily damaged. On the table, the doctor orders. Head low, tears stinging my eyes, I do as he says.
Hold her.
The maid pins my arms down, though she needn't bother. I lay still, from then on, no matter how private the places a doctor touches are. Mistress Iara's words from last night playing in my mind. Your lives belong to the court now, girls. The sooner you understand that, the better.
Lying there on the doctor's table, the dark truth of what she said hits me. It makes me imagine another time I might be lying naked for a demon. And the horror is so real then that I have to clamp my eyes shut, wish myself away. When the inspection is finally over, I sit up and wrap my arms around my body. Tears leak from the corners of my eyes. The doctor moves away, but the young maid hovers nearby, watching me with her chin tipped down, hands clasped in front of her.
Get dressed, Madam Himura snaps.
Her feathers rustle as she gets to her feet.
We don't have all night.
The rest of the assessments pass in a blur. There are fortune teller's analysis and a meeting with the court's most reputable astrologer, and a royal shaman checks for any magic I might have used to change my appearance. There's also another doctor's examination, though this time by a chi doctor, who, thankfully, doesn't require me to take my clothes off. It's past midnight by the time I get back to my room, so I'm surprised to find Lil waiting for me. She leaps up to hug me the second I walk through the door.
I was so worried, she cries.
Has something happened?
I ask, untangling from her. The tone of my voice is hollow, just as I feel.
Her doe ears drop.
I thought you'd have heard, mistress.
One of the girls. She didn't come back from her inspection. She must have used an enchantment on herself during the selection process, and the royal shaman found out.
Apparently it's happened before, but not for many years, she adds shakily.
You were taking so long, I got worried that something had happened to you, too.
They were just extra thorough with my assessments, I explain. I think of Aoki. Cat girl. Which girl was it?
Mistress Rue, the girl from Rain. She seemed nice, Lil adds after a pause.
A hazy memory returns to me from last night of a pale petite girl in an ice blue dress. She had seemed shy, not meeting anyone's eyes, but I noticed the quiet dignity in the way she held herself, her humble demeanor. Belly knots. I didn't even get a chance to speak to her. Though I'm not sure I want to know the answer, I wet my lips and ask, what's going to happen to her?
Nothing good,
Lil says, long lashes hiding her eyes as her gaze drops, and I somehow know that we will never hear of Rue again. 8. I thought Blue might stop calling me 9 now that our numbers have dropped back down to the usual 8, but it's the first thing she does when I arrive in the bathing courtyard the following morning.
You let me down, 9,
she says, thin lips curving. I bet the others you'd be the one to be thrown out. I stiffen. Lil tugs on my elbow.
Ignore her, mistress,
she mumbles. She tries to pull me onward, but I don't move. Blue is lying back in her tub, arms slung over its sides. Her collarbones are as sharp as a pair of featherless wings stretched across her narrow chest like a necklace, and her breasts below, which she exposes without any hint of self-consciousness, are just as pointed. Blue is all angles, mind and body. I meet her eyes with my own narrowed. I hope you didn't bet a lot, I say. From what Madam Himura said,
It doesn't sound like your father will help you with your debts.
The easy chatter of the courtyard drops in an instant. The only sounds are the coos of birds nesting in the eaves, the splash of water as the other girls shift uncomfortably. Blue's lip curls.
Don't pretend to know anything about my life. What could an herb shop owner's daughter from Cienzo know? Especially one whose own mother left her family to become a whore.
Her words hit me like a slap.
What did you say?
News travels fast in the Palace Nine. Better get used to it. She rises out of the barrel, wearing her nakedness proudly, like armor, eyeing me with a stare that dares me to look away.
It's a shame your mother didn't stick around, she adds, picking a bathrobe from the nearest maid and wrapping it around her slim frame. I bet she'd be so proud to see her daughter following in her footsteps.
And then I'm running at her, snarling, my fingers flexing as though they could grow claws. I'm inches away from scraping her face off. That horrible, smug face. How dare she? When there's a blur of movement at my side. Before I can react, a pair of arms encircle me, pulling me off my feet.
Let go, I yell, kicking out. But the girl's grip is surprisingly strong.
She pins me against her, one elbow hooked at my waist, the other across the front of my body. A scent unfurls from her skin, something fresh, ocean-like. Somehow I know it's Cat Girl. Blue's face, shaken for a moment, settles quickly back into a sneer.
Well,
she says, fixing the tie of her bathrobe. That's no way for a paper girl to behave. Enough, Blue, Catgirl snaps. Before Madam Himura or Mistress Iara here. I expect Blue to shoot back a scathing comment, or at least take offense at the way Catgirl spoke to her. But after glaring at me a while more, she shrugs.
I suppose you're right. No point wasting their time over something so petty.
My hands wrap into fists. Calling my mother a whore isn't petty, I shout. Blue rounds on me again, then stops at the look Catgirl gives her. With a toss of her hair, she stalks back into the house, leaving a trail of wet footprints across the courtyard's boarded floor. As soon as Catgirl releases me, I whirl around to face her.
You should have let me claw her face off, I growl.
She regards me coolly. Perhaps. Then she turns to leave, pausing first to add, I am getting tired of that sneer. The comment, almost humorous, disarms me, and I watch her go in silence. Damp hair cascades in a tousle to the low dip of her back. Her bathrobe has come off one shoulder to reveal a curve of smooth, tanned skin, rosy brown. I gave her the nickname Cat Girl because of the shape of her eyes, the keen, feline intelligence in them. But the way she moves is cat-like, too. My eyes track her shifting hips, an unfamiliar warmth turning my belly.
Mistress! Lil grabs my arm, making me start. Are you all right?
What's that girl's name? I ask, distractedly. She follows my gaze.
Oh, Mistress Wren? I thought you might have heard of her already.
This makes me look round. Why?
Mistress Wren is a daughter of Lord and Lady Hano. I recall the two blue-caped men on horseback I saw on the road to the palace.
No wonder Blue listens to Catgirl. If she really is a Hano, the most powerful paper caste clan in the kingdom, and daughter of their leader no less, it explains why she's been acting so superior. Not that it condones it.
Wren,
I murmur to myself, testing the name. It's wrong,
too gentle on the tongue. Wrens are the noisy little birds that fly in pairs.